Hello and welcome to the Nikola Jokic episode of the Hoop Theory Podcast, aka episode 115, which is in honor of him being the best player to ever wear the jersey number 15. Recording this one on the afternoon of Sunday, May 25th in the year of our Lord 2025. My name is Logan Wertman, and unlike usual, I am not joined by my co-host Jacob Roth, or you could also call it usual because last episode was the same story. I think this is the first time in at least a very long time that I've recorded back-to-back solo episodes. But good news, Jacob is sounding like he's going to be able to record here in the next week or so. So we will have an episode with the two of us back together again shortly. I'm going to save some of the topics to touch on that episode with Jacob, mainly the Tatum injury, because, you know, the implications that that will have for the Boston Celtics moving forward. We're going to look at different trades and stuff like that they can make this upcoming offseason. But then also we'll look at the Milwaukee Bucks situation, which is a similar situation, but just even to a higher scale. Not because of who's injured, obviously, because Dame, although he is still an all-star caliber player, is not quite Jason Tatum. But the implications that it has for the franchise of the Milwaukee Bucks are probably even more drastic than for the Tatum with Boston ones. Because of what it means for Giannis and how without Dame being healthy for this entire next season and then even after that, the shaky prospect of him coming back off of a Achilles tear at the age of like 35 at that point is what he'll probably be. It seems like not a great future plan to have. So there's not a lot of roads left for them to build out a team to compete for a championship around their, you know, once in a generation star in Giannis Antetokounmpo. So obviously some moves are probably going to be at least looked at this offseason. Already has spurred a lot of conversation about where Giannis is going to end up and who is going to get him in that deal. That's, I mean, might be like the biggest haul any trade has ever gotten. You know, it's going to be the very rare scenario that KD won't even be the highest or the most, you know, sought after name on the trade market this offseason, even though he's made it very clear that he does not want to be a Phoenix Sun next season. Giannis is just like in an entirely different tier as a prospect or a contract, you know, to add to your roster. And it might even bring up the very rare scenario of a maybe unprecedented, honestly, scenario of a team that could win the title this year. Like if OKC does get it done and they go on to win the championship this season, they're going to be one of the higher ranked, you know, landing spots for Giannis Antetokounmpo. So they could literally win the title and then flip like their second best player and a bunch of picks or whatever they end up doing if they do this. To get the, you know, debatably number one best player in the world, anywhere from one to four. There's the big four, obviously, with Jokic, Giannis, Shai, and Luka. I think those are the clear top tier in the NBA. And some people would even put Jokic maybe on his own little tier above those other three. But yeah, the Thunder could get two of those four guys on their team, which would be wild. So that's something to look out for. It's going to be something that's very interesting to talk about, look at all the different possibilities there. But I'm already kind of getting into things that I want to save for next episode with Jacob. So we will move on. This is the Nikola Jokic episode that you're listening to, episode 115. If you're wondering why he wasn't the original episode 15, that is because for some odd reason, I decided to go with Vince Carter. I'm not sure why I didn't decide to do Jokic at that time. It's been a few years ago now, probably like 2 or 3 years ago that I did episode 15. And so I guess at that point I was thinking like, no, Jokic is too current. I want to go with somebody who's retired and, you know, already established his legacy fully. But even at the time, there's no way I thought that Jokic wasn't going to end up the best, you know, number 15 of all time. Even if he retired at that point, it would still, he'd probably be number one over Vince Carter. But, you know, good to get Vince his own episode as well at 15. So here we go with Jokic being episode 115. It all works out in the end. But first, before we get into any of the rest of today's episode, I would like to thank everybody for listening. Please be sure to hit us up on Patreon or buy me a coffee. If you would like to support us, that's patreon.com/hooptheory and buymeacoffee.com/hooptheory. All of our links can also be found in the description of both the show and the episode, wherever you're watching or listening to this. We would also greatly appreciate it if you would rate the show, leave a like or a comment. Of course, be sure to subscribe and follow the feed. And lastly, we would also love it if you sent something into our mailbag for us to read and react to. Basketball related or otherwise, you can send those over to hooptheory.mailbag@gmail.com. And so for today, what I have on the docket is the awards. All the NBA awards have officially been given out and the voting has been released for them. The MVP and the All-NBA were the most recent to be given out, and that was just the other day. And so we will be going through each of those. That's going to be the bulk of today's episode. But first, before we get into that, a couple quick topics to hit on. The Nuggets, just a little corner for them really quick, because I haven't talked on a podcast since they were eliminated from the NBA playoffs. And for those who don't know, I am a Nuggets fan. I'm sure most people listening do know that. But in the news for the Nuggets, we've got the David Adelman hire. He was the interim head coach. Now he has been brought on as the full-time head coach moving forward. I'm happy with that decision overall. Doesn't surprise me really at all because, you know, he had Jokic and AG especially, and a lot of the other guys pretty strongly in his corner. He made a lot of the right moves. He's got, you know, a relationship with all the guys. He's been the offensive coordinator there for years. Also pushed a lot of the right buttons in the playoffs. Made a lot of the right decisions, mostly in between games is where I really liked what I saw from him. There was, you know, some moments in the games, like the uses of challenges and stuff like that, that I thought was a little iffy. But overall, like, did a very good job for the hand he got dealt with really only like six or seven real guys he could play in the postseason because of how the, you know, previous regime completely gutted the, you know, experience and veterans on the roster to try to get Malone to play the younger guys. And then also just being thrown into the fire, literally three games left in the regular season. That was just kind of an impossible task. And he did as well as you could have hoped, really. I mean, we won a playoff round against a team that was favored against us and made it into the second round and went all the way to seven games with the team that was favored to win the entire championship going into this playoffs. And still, like, I think this entire playoffs, I don't know if there's been a moment that the odds have flipped on that. OKC, I think, has been the favorites this whole time. They were close with Boston at one point. But, you know, ever since Boston got their hole dug for them going down 2-0 against the Knicks and then ultimately losing that series, it has been OKC ever since then. So all that being said, the Nuggets did a pretty good job this postseason. I think this adds to Jokic's legacy. He was, you know, he had more load on him than ever before and also was going against tougher defensive matchups, honestly, than ever before, at least tied. I think the Wolves last season would have been the only series I think that would have given this or these two run for their money. You know, the first round this year, the Clippers, Zubats being like the best one-on-one matchup with him in the league. And then also just a lot of good defensive guards around that. And also some small ball guys that can put up a fight with Batum, and even Ben Simmons did an all right job, you know, all things considered, trying to fend off Jokic. And then in the OKC series, just even though going into it, I heard a lot of talking heads saying how easy it was going to be for Jokic. I never bought into that. I was afraid of them the entire time, even though there's not like a guy that you consider like a Jokic stopper one-on-one. It's just all of their guards and wings, like literally every single possession, they have four or five guys in there that are just swarming around and clogging up passing lanes in such a way. And there's lots of clips that you can find now from this series with, like, especially Alex Caruso, but even guys like Kasan Wallace and Lu Dort, where they're just like baiting Jokic into turnovers in a way that I've never seen before, especially Caruso, how he would pretend, he would like kind of fake that he's helping on a play, like coming over to double, because he knows that if he starts to act like he's leaving, you know, Gordon or somebody under the rim or in the dunker, that Jokic is going to make that pass. And so he starts to shade that way. And as soon as he sees Jokic starting to go to that pass, he'll, you know, jump in the passing lane and either tip it or get an interception on the play. And so, yeah, all that kind of stuff has been very apparent, even in the regular season. The stuff that that defense does to everybody was just a tough matchup and a tough thing to go against. And I'm very impressed with how the Nuggets were able to put up points against that defense pretty consistently, other than a couple games in that series. This narrative also would be a lot, you know, it'd be easier to kind of put out there or express if it were not for the games last night, or the game last night rather, where OKC's defense did not look anything like it has all season long, other than a couple games against the Nuggets. I think this was the highest point total any team has put up on OKC other than the Nuggets in the regular season. And even then, it might have beat it. I think the Nuggets put up 140. And what was the final score last night? Was it 141? Thunder Wolves, 143, actually. So yeah, it might have been the highest point total that they've given up. They might have even said it on the broadcast. It might be an obvious thing that everybody else knows, and anybody listening to the show that watched the game probably heard. It's just I had to watch the game without audio the entire time because I was with family hanging out outside. I just had my phone looking at it. We were listening to music, so I didn't have audio or anything, just watching it on my phone. So there's things like that that I might have missed, little factoids here and there. And one of those being the reason that Terrence Shannon came in the game. I was very confused just watching the game with no sound. Like, why did Terrence Shannon just check into the game at the start of the second quarter? Obviously, it was a blowout already. But, you know, they're going against a team that just blew them out two games in a row. I would not feel confident enough at all with the 21-point lead, I believe, that they had at the time. I would be pretty iffy about trying to throw in somebody like that hasn't played all series. And I never really felt like the Wolves were really searching for another rotation guy. Like, I don't know. The Wolves, I felt like, had a pretty solid, you know, top eight guys that are all playable. Terrence Shannon didn't really ever get a chance in the regular season even. So it was very surprising to see him get in there during actual minutes. But then it paid off immediately. I think he scored 9 points in his first 4 minutes out there. I think he ended up with 15 points total. So yeah, that was the right button to press by Chris Finch, I guess. I don't know. I'm still confused on that. I kind of want to go back and watch the game and have the audio on to see if there was any sort of reason that, you know, other people knew of, or if it was a shock to anybody else as much as it was to me. But yeah, we'll see on that. But yeah, overall, I don't know what really happened game three, why it was such a just shellacking, why OKC's defense was just kind of exploited in a way, it felt like. It was strange to me, for sure. And then also they couldn't really score on the other end, which made it just like a, you know, all-time just blowout in terms of, you know, how good each team is supposedly, you know, the way that they've been so far this playoffs. Like, I think OKC was favored by like it was like 3 points, I want to say. It was a closer one just because, you know, they're back in Minnesota and they're up 2-0. But I think they had a 67% chance, from what I saw in the odds, to win this one. But yeah, those are just some of my thoughts quickly on the Western Conference Finals. Series is 2-1 now. Over in the East, though, the Pacers are up 2-0, with that game being slated to play tonight, just in a few hours from now. So definitely will be played by the time you guys are hearing this. But yeah, Pacers are up 2-0. Nesmith had just an insane, like, T-Mac level performance in game one. At the end there, I believe he had 6 threes in the final 5 minutes of that game. 4 of them, maybe it was 3 of them in the final minute. Regardless, it just way too much. Like, it was like, what is going on? It really felt like a 2K game when, you know, you're trying to just make sure that your team wins at the very end, where just go in and turn the sliders up in the last few minutes and just like keep giving the same guy the ball, just nailing threes. I believe he had 10 points. At the 4:45 mark, he had 10 points total on the game, and he ended with 30 at the end of regulation. I think he had 33 total, including overtime, something like that, at least, maybe 35. So he had 20 points from 4:45 to 0:00. So just, yeah, it was like the T-Mac, the comparison I just made there was the, obviously, the 13 points in 31 seconds or whatever T-Mac's big moment was on the Rockets. It felt like that. And then also to make that game even crazier, it almost ended with a Haliburton step back three at the buzzer that bounced like all the way up to the shot clock off the back of the rim. Didn't touch anything up there though, obviously, because that would have been out of bounds, but then it came all the way back down and just drops in. Then Haliburton does the choking celebration, you know, mimicking the Reggie Miller iconic photo, of him doing that same type of thing. Against the Knicks being the connection there. So it would have been a cool moment if it actually was a three. I think obviously Haliburton was doing that because he thought the game was over, but his toe was on the line. And so it ended up being a two, you know, still huge shot that forced overtime, saved the game. And also they ended up winning in overtime. So it all works out in the end. But yeah, the shot reminded me of the Kawhi obviously bouncing on the rim, the four bounce shot from game 7 in 2019 against Philly. while he was on the Raptors. But it was like a mixture of that shot with another one of the most iconic, you know, famous shots from the past 10 years in the NBA, and that being the Kevin Durant toe on the line two that should have been a three, or it was a two, but it was just close to being a three, obviously. And he, because of the shoe size that he wears like oversized shoes. And if he would wear normal shoes, he probably would have had his toe behind the line. That shot would have been a game winner, I believe, but ended up forcing overtime. So similar situation, I want to say. And that, I think that was also a game seven. It was Nets versus Bucks. I know that for sure. And that was 2021. So it was the year that the Bucks went on to win the title. And obviously could have been the Nets there in the title game or title series if that shot was a three. That was the second round, though, so obviously they still had to go through. Was it Toronto? Did Milwaukee go against Toronto in the conference finals? No, in 2021, it would have been, I think it was the Celtics. Yeah, the Celtics would have been who they faced off against in the 21 Eastern Conference Finals. Anyways, all that to say, Halliburton's shot was just another one for the history books. Crazy NBA moment. I was glad I was there to see it. Not in, there in person, but, you know, watching the game was fun to see. All right. And so now to look at the awards, looking at the voting, and also I had some gimmicks that I decided to do for the awards this year. Like I'm doing a first team all bench, second team all bench, you know, kind of making the teams out of each of the awards. And then also for the ones that already have teams, like MVP is, you know, has all NBA, and Defensive Player of the Year has all defense. For those ones, including rookie, I'm also going to do additional teams. So kind of like what I did for the All-Star game this year, where I took all the players that made the All-Star team and just, you know, acted like they didn't exist anymore and made the All-Star teams again using all the players that didn't make it. I called it the sub All-Star teams. And this one I'm going to be doing basically just a fourth, fifth, and sixth All-NBA team. And then I'll do a, you know, third and fourth for all defense and all rookie. So that should be fun, and we will get into that now. Starting, though, with I'm going to go with the most improved, kind of an anticlimactic start for most people, I would think. But for me, this is probably my favorite award to talk about every year. I really just like the different narratives and like the things around it, like how there's like this kind of debate that's been swelling the past few years over the meaning of the award and like who it should be given to, what kind of candidates should be good candidates, and what different circumstances, what makes, you know, a good most improved candidate for the award. But the main quote that I feel like is circulated a lot is similar to the one that JJ Redick had this year, kind of that same sentiment where he says, like, it shouldn't be guys that who were already good. You know, like the person who should win the MIP shouldn't be a guy who is like a highly touted draft pick that now is just becoming like an all-NBA player, like a Cade Cunningham this year or like a John Morant a few years ago. They think that that's not in the spirit of the award, and then it should rather be given to like bench guys or guys that, you know, were not really rotation players at all that now are, basically, I guess. And so my thoughts on this, I understand like that's kind of like the traditional way of viewing it, or like a stylistic way that people like to think of the award. But to me, I just like to think of it purely as most improved, and looking at how to measure that. Like, how can we measure who got the most better, you know, this season? And I think a lot of times, honestly, those cases where it's a guy's going from like a pretty inefficient number one option, somebody who's not winning his team a lot of games and kind of being subpar in that area as a star of a team, where he just takes a one-year jump and develops into a guy that is doing that actually very consistently and effectively, you know, and is becoming like either like an All-NBA candidate or at the very least like a legit All-Star candidate, and to the most extreme cases, like an MVP candidate, you know. So, which I believe like Cade Cunningham this year, who ended up getting second in MIP, he ended up getting, I think, seventh, maybe it was. We'll see here in a little bit when we go through MVP voting. But I believe he was the seventh highest vote getter in MVP, which is kind of wild from where, you know, people thought of him last year as like a not even close to an all-star level player yet. So to me, that I think is the not only like the hardest jump for a player to make to like vault themselves into that category of player. It's not only that, but it's also like it's the most in a vacuum when you're looking at a player. Like, it's purely improvement for the most part. Obviously, there's some factors is like coaching and teammates, you know, and system changes and stuff like that that can definitely help out a player have a better looking season and better production. It's not just them necessarily purely improving, but there's more, even more variables in most of the other cases for players, like a player who, you know, found his way into a new system with a new team and has a new role and just has an opportunity like now that he didn't really have before. A lot of, like, I think what JJ Redick or a lot of those people on that side would consider like the most traditional MIP candidates, a lot of times those are those guys that are like, you know, like the Lauri Markkanen from the other year, or this year, like Dyson Daniels, you know, the guy who ended up winning it, or Christian Brown on the Nuggets. And not to say that these guys are bad MIP candidates. I have them in my, you know, top guys this year. But I think it's just, I prefer the player who it's just purely, for the most part, improvement that you're looking at. When he, like Cade Cunningham, had all of the shots that he wanted last season. Like, any shot that he wanted, he could take. You know, so, and he had that same like level of freedom and opportunity and all that kind of stuff that he had this season. And we just saw like a huge jump in his production. So I, like, in that, it's pretty easy to see like a lot of that. There's a good amount of improvement there that you can measure. But with a player like Dyson Daniels, who barely got any playing time in New Orleans, and in the little spurts that we saw him in, seemed like a guy that could get a lot of steals, could defend like any guy on the perimeter, and had, you know, some stuff to his game that looked interesting. And then he goes to a new situation with in Atlanta, where he has a point guard, a guy who can handle really all the offensive duties, and then he can just play off of him as a cutter on the offensive end, and then just cover up him on the defensive end, just be like the guy that's going to take the hardest defensive assignment and fight over screens and get, you know, all the steals in the world. That was Dyson Daniels. And it's like, yeah, there's probably some improvement there, but it's hard to tell how much when you never really got to see him in that role in New Orleans. Like, if he would have had that role last year, would we have seen something similar? It's hard to tell. So that doesn't make them not an MIP candidate to me, obviously. But I'm just, I guess that's the reason why I really do feel like the Cade Cunninghams and the John Morants, those type of candidates for MIP, are very worthy candidates for this award. And they're the guys that I tend to actually favor. When there's a really good candidate with that type of case, those are usually the guys that I go with. So this year, Cade Cunningham was actually my winner for this award. He would have been my number one vote on my ballot. Dyson Daniels, I had second, who ended up winning the award. And then Christian Brown from the Nuggets, I had third. This is actually, I could just give this as my first team most improved, because those are the first three names on, you know, my first team. And then Ivica Zubats is the fourth guy I have on my first team most improved. And then Austin Reeves as the fifth guy. You know, just another guy that really upped his production and scoring. And he had a little bit more, you know, opportunity this year than he had last year. But still, like, he was the, is mainly with D'Angelo Russell being gone is the big thing that he got a lot of his reps and opportunity. But still, just the way he was able to score just a very high amount on a team that had Luka and LeBron on it for a lot of the season. And when they didn't have Luka, they had AD, was just very impressive to me, and took a big, even another big jump than what he's already taken in his career so far. So that was my first team most improved. Second team, I have Quentin Grimes as the first guy. And he was a guy that I was thinking about for the first team. It's just, he had a kind of a weird season, another one with like the opportunity thing. Like, he's thrust into a role on the Sixers, who are a tanking team where they're looking for anybody to be, you know, the guy that's taking a lot of their shots. And in that scenario, he was able to just put up huge numbers. He had multiple 40-point games, really took off, and is looking like a promising player for them in the future, instead of just like a role player that he was looked at before. Denny Avdija is the other guy, or the next guy I have on my second team most improved. Over there in Portland, another guy that's kind of like the, not quite to the same extent as the Markkanen one a couple of years ago, but it's like a miniature version of that, where it's he's going from Washington, where he didn't have as much opportunity because there's a lot of guys in the same kind of position category as him, didn't get a lot of on-ball responsibilities, and he goes to Portland, where he does get more of those opportunities It has guards that are, shooters off the ball that he can find as a passer, and also guys that can pass to him as a cutter. And just, that system there. So it's looked good there. And then Malik Beasley, another guy I have on the second team most improved because of his shooting, just went through the roof this year in Detroit, became a really good player for them. And then DeAndre Hunter on my second team, as well as Najee Marshall. So that will do it for my most improved guys. I have one honorable mention written down. I could probably find more if I really scoured around, but one guy I thought of was Scoot Henderson. And then I had a couple guys that I wanted to mention as ineligible guys that were not, eligible for the award because of the 65 game rule or minutes restriction. I shouldn't call it restriction, but minutes minimum, you have to play at least 20 minutes in a game for it to be considered an award game. So you need about 65 games playing over 20 minutes. The reason why I say about is because if you have 63 games where you play over 20 minutes and you have two more games where you play at least 15 minutes, then that will count as 65 award games. It's kind of a weird definition that the NBA decided to go with for this. But yeah, Ty Jerome and Norm Powell are two of the guys that I thought would be really good candidates for this award that ended up not being able to be even voted for because of those eligibility requirements. And so to look at the voting results for the most improved player, who, if I feel like I failed to mention, is the George Mikan Trophy. I'm trying to make that a thing, make that a trend, being able to call the awards by their, given name, named after a player, each of them. And I want it to be more like hockey. In the NHL, they have the Hart Award or the Hart Trophy or whatever they call it, and so on and so forth. They kind of just call them that instead of what they mean. And I kind of want to make that a thing here, at least in the hoop theory world. So we've got the Mikan Trophy. This is the voting results from that. Dyson Daniels ended up first. Wow, I had no idea. I thought, wow, Cade Cunningham did not even get second. This is my first time actually looking at the voting results. Dyson Daniels got first with 44 first place votes, 36 seconds, and 4 third. So that, I believe, adds up to... Actually, no, it doesn't add up to 100. So not anybody got all 100 votes available from the... NBA voters, but he had 332 total points. Ivica Zubats ended up getting second. He had 23 first place votes, 18 second place votes, and 17 third place votes with 186 points total. I think that one was a really good pick. I kind of had him fourth, I guess, but I feel like I'm wrong there. I feel like I could have had him as high as second or even first. He's a really good candidate as well, Ivica Zubats. I feel like the top four especially are my primary top four, and then it kind of drops off a little bit. But that is actually the top four that ended up there in the voting as well, just in a different order. Cade Cunningham being the guy with the third most votes, 15 firsts, 11 seconds, 14 thirds. And then Christian Brown got fourth place, only 9 first place votes, 15 second, 30 thirds. And then they have the same fifth guy as me as well, Austin Reeves, with 3 firsts, 4 seconds, and 12 thirds. So he's a bit of a drop-off after the top four. And then here comes a guy that I didn't even consider, but I probably should have. I didn't really even think of him for most improved, and that is Evan Mobley. I feel like I thought of him earlier on in the year, but when it came time here at the end where I was going through players, I didn't even really think about him, to be honest. Probably should have. Amen Thompson is another guy. A lot of people, don't look at second-year guys as a rule. I'm still unsure if that's going to be a rule for me, but I kind of just like unknowingly follow it. I don't really question why I follow it as a rule when it's not actually a rule. It's just a made up thing that some voters go by because you have a kind of natural leap that you make in between your first and second year. I feel like my most logical thought on that is we shouldn't add in rules that don't exist in the award descriptions. That should be a thing that you just generally shouldn't do. But also, I don't know, I guess I just kind of feel that way as well. I'm like, nah, those are second year guys. I'm not going to think about them. But I guess I'm just not sure if that's the way I should do it. And then Denny Avdia is the next guy in the voting. Tyler Hero got a vote for the first place, a couple for the next places as well. Josh Giddey, who was a guy I thought of. I didn't even put him in the honorable mentions, though. Peyton Pritchard is on here. I didn't really think of him for most improved, but I think that makes some sense. Tumani Kamara makes some sense for sure. Out of Portland, OG Anunoby. I don't really get that one all that much, other than maybe his offensive game expanded a tiny bit this season, but still not really a whole lot. He got one second place vote. And then Jalen Williams got two third place votes. Jalen Williams out of Oklahoma City, the Santa Clara one, their second best player, which I don't know. I mean, I think he improved for sure. I didn't really think of him for being a candidate, but yeah, a lot of those ones I do understand though, for sure. Then moving on to the MVP award and then also the All-NBA voting, which I'm just realizing I did not add the link to that on my notes as I did with all the other ones, because when I first typed out these notes, the All-NBA team had not even been announced yet. I'm excited to get to look at these for the first time. And actually, just really quick off the top, the first thing I notice, as far as other guys who got votes that did not make one of the three teams, there's actually not as many of them as I thought there would be. There's only, looks like, nine. There's nine total players who got votes to be on one of the three teams that did not make it on one of the three teams. Feels like there's usually more than that. But anyways, the first team, looking at that, there's the top four guys all got 100. I don't know if this has ever happened before. I'd be interested to see what the record is on this. But the top four guys on the first team all had all 100 of their first team votes. So it was unanimous that they all were not just on one of the three teams, but were on the first team specifically. And that was Giannis Antetokounmpo, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic, and Jason Tatum. And then as the fifth guy on the first team, we've got Donovan Mitchell, who made it on there. He's pretty comfortably ahead of the guy in fifth, or in sixth, rather, the guy that's first on the second team. But not all that far ahead, less than 100 total points. But he had 61 first place votes, 35. I hate saying place. I hate how the NBA does this. It says place in their voting results for the ballots, even though it should say team. Because it's not a first place vote. You're voting them on a team. So it's first team votes. He had 61 of those. He had 35 second team votes and 4 third team votes. And then Anthony Edwards is the top guy on the second team. 11 first team votes, 87 seconds and 2 thirds. And then LeBron, not too far behind him at the second spot on the second team. He actually had more first team votes than Ant did with 17. 61 seconds, 21 thirds. Steph Curry is the next guy, 2 first team votes, 68 second team, and 30 third teams. And then Evan Mobley as the fourth guy on the second team, 169 and 26. Jalen Brunson rounds out the second team with 2, 62, and 36. Makes sense there. Let me compare this really quick to what I had for my second and first team. First team, obviously, exactly the same. Mitchell was my fifth guy as well. Second team, I have Ant, who was also the first guy on the second team. Steph, who's the third guy on the second team, I had him second. Mobley, I had third, who was fourth, I believe, just now looking at it. Yeah, he was fourth. And then LeBron, I have fourth, who was the second guy on the second team. And then I had Cade Cunningham, as my final guy on the second team. Jalen Brunson was the one who did end up with that nod. Very close, though, with Cade Cunningham. Only trailing him by 9 total points as the first guy on the third team. And then Karl-Anthony Towns is the second guy. I should have mentioned Cade Cunningham is the only guy on the third team that had any first team votes. He had 6 first team votes, 52nd and 43 third. Cat was the next guy, though, as I mentioned. He had 0 first teams and then 40 seconds and 52 thirds. Tyrese Haliburton was the third guy on the third team. 11 second teams and 46 third team votes. Jalen Williams out of Oklahoma City, the same one we just mentioned for the most improved. He had 4 second place votes and 61 thirds. He ended up as the fourth guy on the third team. And James Harden made it on the All-NBA. I was not expecting that. That kind of surprised me, to be honest. But definitely one of the guys I had as a candidate, for sure. But yeah, he's on the third team. As the fifth guy with 4 second team votes and 56 third team votes. And so then to compare that to my third team, I had Brunson, who they had on the second team, but he was the top guy on my third. And I had Cat as the second guy on my third team, who was also the second guy on the third team in real life. Jaren Jackson Jr., Triple J. Oh, so he didn't make... Wow. So that's the first guy that I have on here that didn't make All-NBA. That's crazy to me. I thought for sure Jaren Jackson Jr. would make All NBA. So honestly, Grizzlies fans should be ecstatic right now, because this is the one of the rules I really hate about the NBA, that I don't know what way to do it better, but it's just something that's very unfortunate. The implications that, you know, All NBA selections have on teams, especially smaller market teams, that you gotta, when you make All NBA, your max contract, you become eligible for a supermax contract as opposed to a max. So your the total you can get paid for your next contract goes from 25% of the salary cap to 35%, which is a big jump and makes a big difference. So in a year where a player is a fringe All NBA guy who like sneaks in there and gets a third team spot, all of a sudden he's like going to, you know, affect your tax book or affect your team's salary table in a much more drastic way, and makes your team harder to build moving forward. So it's just kind of like a negative or you know, unfortunate downside to the way that the financial system works in the NBA. But then it also makes sense for, you know, how else would you decide who's eligible for a supermax and who's not? So I don't know. I don't know what better way to do it. It's just unfortunate. But as I was saying, though, Memphis Grizzlies fans should be ecstatic that Triple J did not make an All-NBA team, because now he is his contract moving forward is going to be a much, much more valuable contract that can really make or break your franchise's future, to be honest, in building around your guys. So that's huge for them. I'm happy for Grizzlies fans. That was going to be an unfortunate thing. And another one that's kind of like that, but a guy that was much more of a solidified, you know, All-NBA guy this year, Evan Mobley, that makes his, you know, future with the Cavs, who they have a lot of, you know, stars on the roster that they have to pay. That's going to make it even harder to keep those guys together. But yeah, I had Triple J as the third guy on my third team. He did not end up on the real one. And then I had Alperen Şengün as well on my third team, who was replaced instead by, I guess, Jalen Williams and James Harden were the two guys that made it on there that I did not have. But I had Tyrese Haliburton on mine, and he did end up on the real one. So there we go. So the two guys that I guess I'll swap in then, just to do my fourth, fifth, and sixth teams correctly, using the players who did not actually make it on there instead of the players that I just had in there as my opinion. And while I actually had Jalen Williams, believe it or not, on my fifth team, and he made it in there as a third team guy, which is a little surprising to me. I mean, I felt like I was probably a little bit lower than a lot of people would put him. It's just hard. There's a lot of good candidates for it this year. So it was hard for me to decide. All right. So now I'm ready to go through my fourth, fifth, and sixth team All-NBA. So my fourth team, starting off with that one, obviously I've got Triple J and Alperen Şengün there, since I did have them on my personal third team. And then the next guy I have is Domantas Sabonis out of Sacramento. And then Jaylen Brown from the Celtics as the second Celtic to make it on one of these All-NBAs. And then Ivica Zubac is the last guy I have on my fourth team All-NBA. Moving on to the fifth team, Darius Garland. So I have at the first spot. And then Devin Booker is the next guy, a guy that probably won't make it on a lot of other people's. But I mean, obviously, this is a fifth team, but it was a guy that I was, you know, looking at as a honorable mention for All-NBA for sure. Trae Young as the next guy on the fifth team for me, Austin Reeves, and then Pascal Siakam will round out that fifth team. And then I've got Tyler Hero on the sixth team as the first guy leading it off, and DeMar DeRozan after that. And then Jamal Murray is the third guy I have on the sixth team. This is where, you know, it kind of starts to fall off a bit after the fifth team, I feel like. And then OG Anunoby is the fourth guy that I have on my sixth team. And the fifth guy rounding it all out is Jarrett Allen from the Cleveland Cavaliers. So there are four Cavs who made it on the top six teams for me. Let me know, I guess, what your guys' picks would be for the next three All-NBA teams if they were to exist. But then not quite done yet, because I do have some honorable mentions for the sixth team. You know, guys that I was considering putting on there. There's Zach LaVine, Bam Adebayo, Desmond Bane, Josh Hart, Jalen Green, Kobe White, Denny Avdia, Scotty Barnes, Anthony Simons, Josh Giddey, and Mikal Bridges are just some names that I had written down. I guess I probably could have thought of some more. It feels like there's somebody I'm forgetting, but, you know, they might be here in the ineligible group that I'll go through. These are the games that each of these players played. They ended up not being eligible for All-NBA selection. The first guy who definitely would have been on one of these teams for sure was KD, Kevin Durant, with 62 games played. And then De'Aaron Fox was also one of these guys with 62 games played. And then Franz Wagner out of Orlando had 60. I feel like he probably honestly would have made it on definitely at least one of my six teams if he got to 65 games. And then Norm Powell only had 60 as well. Fred VanVleet with 60. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Jimmy Butler, Trey Murphy, Bradley Beal, Tyrese Maxey, Luka Doncic, Ja Morant, LaMelo Ball, Lauri Markkanen, Victor Wembanyama, Paolo Banchero, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Jalen Johnson, Chet Holmgren, DeJounte Murray, Zion Williamson, Joel Embiid, and Brandon Ingram. Obviously, some of those guys, even if you stretched out their season to 65 games, probably didn't play well enough to make it on here, like Paul George. It's just some names that normally you would think of as All-NBA guys that were not eligible to be All-NBA guys this year. I honestly might break this episode up into multiple parts since we're already getting to a pretty good size for a solo episode for me to do. So I will save the rest of these awards for another episode. But we got through the MIP and the All-NBA. I guess we'll start off the next one with MVP because I did not actually look at that. But yeah, so then we'll go through the Olajuwon Award, the Defensive Player of the Year, and the All-Defensive Teams, as well as Red Auerbach, Coach of the Year, Jerry West, Clutch Player of the Year, John Havlicek, Sixth Man of the Year, Wilt Chamberlain, Rookie of the Year, and that will do it, I guess. And I guess also all rookie teams as well will be what we go through for the next time I record either solo or I, because I feel like I'll probably have a lot to talk about with Jacob that does not involve awards. So it'll be later on, either with Jacob or without him, we'll do the rest of these awards. But thank you for everybody who listened all the way through this one. Appreciate it. Like, subscribe, do all the stuff I said at the beginning. Without further ado, stay happy, stay healthy, and I will talk to you guys next time.